and doubtless it will be returned when Her Majesty has spoken to you." He paused, weighing the piece in his hand. "That feint you used out yonder, would you show it to me? Some day I shall have such a weapon as this, and it would be good to know." I showed him, and he practiced, chortling, and was expert in no time. "Thank you, friend," cries he. And I decided that one of my calculated good deeds wouldn't hurt. "If all speeds well with the Queen, you shall have such a pistol," I told him. And he was still exclaiming his gratitude when the Chamberlain returned with two turbaned guardsmen and led the way out, Flashy being ushered in his wake. The guardsmen thrashed aside the crowd who'd been craning their necks at the doorway to see the funny foreigner, and with Wadeju at my elbow, we crossed to the big two-story building, passed in between more turbaned sentries, and waited in a large dim hall while the Chamberlain went ahead through a great bead curtain which was presently held aside by two of the loveliest handmaidens you could ever hope to see. True gala girls with cool, "damn you, me lad" expressions and figures to match. The Chamberlain's voice called out from within. Wadeju prodded me forward, and I strode into the presence of Mastiat the Looking Glass, Queen of Wallogala, and with luck, Guardian Angel of Her Britannic Majesty's army in Abyssinia. You never know what to expect on encountering royalty. I've seen them stark naked except for wings of peacock feathers, Empress of China, giggling drunk in the embrace of a wrestler, Maharani of the Punjab, voluptuously wrapped in wet silk, Queen of Madagascar, wafting to and fro on a swing, Rani of Jhansi, and tramping along looking like an out-of-work charwoman, our own gracious monarch. But I've never seen the like of the court of the Queen of Gala. Her Majesty was at luncheon, which she ate surrounded by lions, four huge maned brutes grouped about the great couch where she lounged on cushions, an arm over the neck of one of the beasts, while with her free hand she helped herself to dainties from trays presented by two more fair attendants. Another lion was nuzzling her shoulder from behind, and the remaining two crouched at her feet, one with its head against her knee, for all the world like four great tabbies toadying for scraps, which she fed them from time to time, dainty fingers popping titbits into jaws I'd have not approached for a pension. And if that were not enough to bring me to a dead stop, there was something else. Seated on a low stool a little way from the couch, regarding me with venomous dislike, was Ulaba Walk. A split second, and then she was off the stool like a striking snake, whipping the knife from her boot as she launched herself at me, screaming vengeance, and it would have been Flashy R.I.P. Abyssinia 1868 if Wadeju hadn't thrust me aside, caught her wrist as the knife descended, thrown her on her back, and pinned her all in one lightning movement. She was hollering blue murder as he disarmed her. The old Chamberlain was collapsing in an apparent fit. My escorting guardsmen were hastening to put themselves between the commotion and the throne. The apartment seemed to be full of squealing handmaidens. And Queen Mastiat gently slapped the muzzle of a lion which had risen, growling at the disturbance. Beyond that, she didn't blink an eyelid, waiting until Ulaba's shrieks had subsided and applying herself to a chicken leg in the meantime. "Fair, fat, and forty," was how Speedy had described her. She must have been a stunner as a girl, but sloth and gluttony had plumped out the comely face, and if fat was a trifle unkind, she still looked as though it might take two strong men to raise her commanding form from its cushioned bed. It was clad in a splendid robe of shimmering blue silk, with one fleshy polished shoulder and arm bare, and if there was plenty of her, it all appeared to be complete and in working order. Elspeth would have called her Sonsi, signifying bonny and buxom. As a commoner, she'd have been a fine figure of a woman. Being royalty, she was stately, regal, imposing, statuesque, or any other courtly grovel you please, and a perfectly acceptable piece of mattress fodder, supposing she had the energy. For a more lethargic lady I'd seldom seen. The full, good-natured face, as light as creamy coffee between the long, oiled braids, was placid, and the large, slightly protruding eyes were almost sleepy as she considered me, toying with the mane of her blasted man-eater. Seeing her so at ease among her cushions, pondering which dish to tackle next, it struck me that if she was as shrewd and ruthless as I've been told, She knew how to conceal it. Even her voice, when she addressed Ulaba, was gentle and bored.